Now, I want to tell you today, I want to dispel this lie that God can't use you. In fact, I believe that God can and will use you and your story to bring others to a relationship with Jesus Christ. It is your story that is going to be the thing that compels people to enter into this same relationship that you have with Jesus Christ. And so, for any of you who are on Facebook, I posted a question to Facebook, and I want to finish up the answer this week. The question I posed was this: what motivates you or hinders you in sharing the good news of Jesus Christ? And as I posted that question, last week we talked some about the motivations, but this week I want to talk about these things that hinder us. So I wrote down a few that you guys shared and some common themes. See if any of these sound familiar to you, okay? The hindrances to sharing the good news of Jesus Christ. One is a fear of our past. Anybody have a past and you think, man, if anybody ever knows, you know, this past, this thing that I've done, it's going to be this anchor around my neck for the rest of my life, and so it's going to always hinder me. For some, it's insecurity. You're just afraid. You don't know if you know what to say or what to do, if you're the right person. And so you're filled with this insecurity, so you just don't even try. For some, and actually for many, it was this fear of not having the answer. I don't know if anybody relates to that, but you think, but if I get the courage to start a conversation with someone, if they ask me one question, boy, I'll be ruined. I won't know what to say. I'll look like a total fool. I'll be embarrassed. You see how the other ones come back into play? The insecurity and the fear and the past and all that comes back into play. If they just ask me one thing, I'll get tripped up and I'll just make a mess of it. And then this fourth one, this fear of rejection. What if you put yourself out there and this person looks at you and they say something mean to you, right? You know, they could tell you to get off, or go away, leave them alone. They don't want to hear about you and they don't want to hear about this God that you're talking about. And so you're like, man, I can't handle the rejection. I deal with enough rejection in life. I don't need to submit myself to anything else. And those tend to be the things that hinder us. And I would say all of those are carefully crafted by the enemy because he knows the power of your story. Did you hear me? He knows the power of your story, that it will help people to see that God is not dead, that He is very much alive, that He transforms lives, that He redeems people. So the devil doesn't want your story out. And all these things surface. In fact, some of them he'll remind you of as soon as you go to do it, just to try to keep you. And so what I wanted to do today, I've been looking forward to telling you this story. It's in John chapter 4. It's the story of the Samaritan woman, the woman at the well. Anybody familiar with her story? Yeah, it's a very familiar story, but I want to kind of recapture the telling of it for you. But here's your assignment as I'm telling the story. I'm going to read some verses and then I'm going to tell portions of the story. Here's your assignment. While I'm doing that, you need to look at this woman, this Samaritan woman, this woman at the well, and you need to see if you can find within this woman the things that we just talked about. Does she have any reason to fear her past? You need to ask yourself that question. Does this woman have any reason to fear her past? Is there any reason why this woman ought to be insecure about talking about Jesus? Is there any reason this woman should be afraid if someone asks her a question that she doesn't have the answer to? And is there any reason why this woman should fear rejection? You got your assignment? John chapter 4. So the story begins and Jesus is weary, he's tired. He's been on this journey, he's traveling through this land of Samaria. And he stops there at this well and he sends his disciples off. Their assignment is to go and get food to bring back to Jesus. Your assignment is to find those questions that I just asked this woman, right? You thought I was just kidding. I really want you to do this. So Jesus, he sits down at this well. Most people believe that it's in the middle of the day, sun beaming down, very hot, not the time of day you would normally go to fetch water. So Jesus is sitting there and this woman comes up and he asks her for a drink. Now, the odd thing about this is she's a Samaritan and he's a Jew, and they hate each other, Jews and Samaritans, about as much as anybody you could ever think of. All right? Any two races put together, there is more hatred between Jews and Samaritans at that time than about anything we can think of. And so Jesus is there, and he asks her to give him a drink. He's going to drink out of the same water pot, which is, we just don't do that. And so she's blown away, one, that he's talking to her, that he asked her a question, that he's a Jew, that he wants to drink from this water. And she says, sir, you don't even have a pot. And then Jesus responds, and this conversation that he has with this woman, it's a strange conversation because she's really proud about this pot that she has. And Jesus said, if you knew the kind of water that I had, you'd ask me for a drink. And now she's trying to figure out what he's saying, right? There's water that you got to drink, and she's thinking, man, if I could have to not have to make this trip back and forth to the well every day, that'd be swell. I'd like to have some of that water. I don't think she has any idea he's talking about anything spiritual at the moment. And so the conversation goes on, and she says, sir, give me this water so I will not be thirsty. And he said, go and call your husband and come here. And the lady says to him, you have correctly said, I have no husband. I mean, she says, I don't have a husband. Jesus says, yep, you have answered that correctly. You have had five husbands. Ooh, is there anybody in the room that's had five husbands? Because if so, you could give a hearty amen to this, right? Huh? If you have had five husbands, some of you have just had one, and you're thinking, Lord, that is a task. You know, that is an assignment. And he says, you've answered well. You've had five. We automatically know this woman's got problems, right? And then he says, but the one that you're living with is not your husband. And she goes, oh my goodness, he knows everything about me. And all of a sudden, you get this sense that Jesus is peering into her soul. And that he's seen all of her past. But for whatever reason, she doesn't run away. I think it's because when Jesus brings up our past, he doesn't do it in such a way that it condemns us. He brings it up in such a way that we know, wait a minute, he knows everything. I can't hide. Oh, now what's he going to do about this situation? But I think she tries to change the subject. You ever had somebody bring up a difficult situation or a question, and you're thinking, boy, the safest thing to do right now is for me to change the subject. So she tries to change the subject. She said, if you're so smart, I got a question for you. Where are we supposed to worship? This is a weird conversation, right? It's like, why are you changing the subject? Maybe because she doesn't want to talk about that. But Jesus goes along with it, and he says, you want to know where to worship? And he has this conversation about mountains and where to worship, and it's where we get this thing that says that God is spirit and those who worship him will worship in spirit and in truth. And then there's something interesting in verse 25, in verse 26. Jesus actually reveals that he's the Messiah. He never does that. But for this woman, he reveals that he's the Messiah. And as he does that, the disciples are coming back to him. And apparently they've been out and now they're coming back. And when they get here, this woman gets so wrapped up in this conversation that she has that she leaves this water pot and she has to go out and tell these villagers about this person that she's found at the well. Now, that blows me away. It blows me away that this woman has heard something and it compels her to leave this water pot and go. Now let's go back. Did you find her in the story? Did you find her in the questions? If not, let's see if we can kind of unpack some of those. So I said one of the hardest things for us is that we fear our past. Did this woman have a past? Oh, yes, she did. Five husbands. We don't even know why she had five. Did she kill them all? Did they divorce her because she was like snakes in the head? You know, we don't know. We don't know, but did she have a past? Yes. When she goes back to this place in Samaria, apparently everyone knows. I'm thinking if this woman lived in Chester, we'd all know her by name, wouldn't we? Wouldn't we? I mean, because some of us, we got some past. And if you grew up in Chester, everybody knows your stuff. And you're probably sitting there thinking, man, I grew up here. I got some stuff. Clearly, I'm disqualified. No, you're not disqualified. This woman with a past goes running back to tell people about this man Jesus that she saw. And then these insecurities. Is this woman insecure? You better believe it. She's out at the time of day where nobody else is getting water. Why? Because she don't want to be around anybody else. She wants to go and do her business at the well when everybody else is gone, because she doesn't want to have the conversations, the looks that people look at her with, that eye. When people know your past, they look at you that way. Sometimes, really, y'all, they're not looking at you that way. They're not. It's just our own insecurity surfacing. We think everybody's looking at us. We think everybody's judging us. Do you know what? Most people ain't got time for it. They too busy worrying about their own junk. I just set some of you free if you just realized it. Yeah? You've been walking around thinking, if anybody ever figures out my stuff, I'm ruined. They ain't worried about you. They worried about their own stuff. I'll give you my 16-40-60 rule. I've given you that before. You know what the 16-40-60 rule is? At 16, you are consumed by what other people think of you. You're constantly worried about what they're going to think about the way you dress and the way you look and the way you do your hair and all these things. And then at 40, you get to this place where you're like, I don't care. You know? I used to walk out of my closet when Brantley and I were married and we were young, and she'd look at me. You know that look, guys, where she goes. You know, she stares up and down. And back up again, and she asked me, are you really going to wear that? And I'm like, no, I was just practicing. I'm going back in to put on the real thing. Now, what do you suggest? Yeah, what are people going to think? But at 40, I walk out, and she looks at me, and it's like, I don't care. I'm leaving. Yeah, I don't care. I'm too old to care now. At 40, you get to this place, you just don't care. And then at 60 is where the real revelation comes. You know what that is? At 60, the revelation comes that nobody was ever thinking about you. You were never on their mind. They were too concerned about themselves. So did she have some insecurities? Yeah, she had good reason. Did she have the answers? We got to keep reading to hear this one. So she goes back into the city, and here's what she says. Some of my favorite, a favorite invitation, if you will, in all of Scripture. Here is, to me, the greatest invitation you can ever give a person. Come and see a man. Verse 29, come and see a man who told me all the things that I had done. This is not the Christ, is it? Do you hear the question that's still in her? She's met this man. He's prophesied over things that nobody else can know. He told her, I'm the one, I'm the Messiah. He never does that. She runs back into the city and she says, come and see a man. He's told me everything. Do you think he's the Christ? Do you hear the question is still there? And I will tell you that if you wait until the moment that all your questions are gone, you will wait for Christ to return. Because you're not going to ever know everything. In America, I know we love to figure everything out and we like to make sense of everything. But if you're going to wait to come to Christ until you all figure it out, or if you're going to wait to share the good news of Jesus Christ until you've got all your questions answered, it's not going to happen. But she goes with, I love, she goes with what she's got, which is, "Ooh, I'd have met a man. And I don't know, but there's something special about him. And I think you need to come." You think he's the Christ? Here's what I love too about this. What does she do with her questions? She's taking them right back to Jesus. That's where you take all your questions. If you come up with questions that you don't have the answer for and you just drop them, if you just leave them and continue on with life, you will have made a mistake. In fact, there's a question of why she left the pot. Is it that she left the pot because she's so excited about Jesus that she just forgets it? Or a pot's a very valuable thing. Did you know that? In fact, she tells Jesus, "You don't have a pot. I got a pot." Yeah? It's a very valuable thing. Could it be that not only did she get so excited, but could it be that the pot, she says to Jesus, "Look, I'm going to be right back. And I'm going to leave this pot because I don't need you to go anywhere." All right? This is not in the days of the cell phones where you say, "Jesus, give me your number and I'll call you." If he leaves, we don't know where he's going. And how are we going to find him? So she says, "I'm going to put a down payment here, okay? You know I'm serious. Don't go anywhere. I got to go get some people." Okay? And then she runs off, coming, "See a man, come back. Let's come back with our questions and let's see this man." And there doesn't seem to be any fear of rejection in her at this moment. It doesn't seem like she's at all concerned about what people are going to say, because for whatever reason, she has so been captured by the words of Jesus that that's all she can think about. And then, look what happens after that. It says that many, in verse 39, many of the Samaritans believed in him because the word of the woman who testified. The most unlikely woman in the village starts revival. Isn't that something? You ever looked at somebody and thought, if they just get saved, they would be amazing for the kingdom of God? You ever looked at somebody and thought, they're just going to be amazing? You know what I've learned? I have no idea how amazing somebody's going to be. Well, some of the most unlikely people, some of the most unlikely people, when they look into Jesus' eyes and when he looks back, they get so transformed, they're the ones that turns the world upside down. It is often the most unlikely people. It's the ones that everybody else looks at and go, "Ooh, Lord, ain't nothing going to happen with them." Some of you, some people said that about you, and look where you are now. They said, "Nothing's going to, that boy ain't going to amount to nothing. Yeah, that girl, she ain't never going to be nothing." And now look at you. Do you see why you need to tell your story if that's you? Because there's somebody out there thinking, "I'm not going to amount to nothing." If somebody don't go and tell them that God can redeem that situation, it's probably you. And so she is this unlikely person who leads revival. And then in verse 41 it says, many more believed because of his words. And so these people, they go back to Jesus and they hear his words and they're transformed. Just a couple quick points. Jesus rarely saw an outbreak of revival like this. To the Jews, they rejected him. So everywhere he went, he got basically rejected by them. Now, did they want his miracles? Oh yeah, they sure did. They wanted his miracles. But that's about all they wanted. But he goes into Samaria, this unlikely place, speaks to this unlikely woman. She goes out and starts a revival, and it says that many were saved. Now, I love that the Bible tells us some things about numbers, because it says many, which means not everybody, right? Or they would have said everybody. There are places in Scripture where God does miracles and it said everybody in that, I don't remember now, town or village, said everybody in there got healed. You know what I believe happened? Everybody got healed. I think that's why it's in there. I think many's in here for a reason too. Not everybody that you talk to, not everybody that you see is going to receive Jesus, because we all have free will. But many did because of this woman. So now, let me bring this thing back to you. Because you have a story. And the thing that the enemy wants is to keep you from telling it. And so I want you to go back and rehearse all the things that God has done for you. And as this miracle breaks out in Samaria, the interesting thing is God does no miracles here. You don't see any report of Him healing anybody. He just speaks. And I've been thinking about something this week, and I just want to bring it up to you. I know that there is a God. Do I have questions? Yeah, you bet I do. In fact, I got some in my Bible. I'll get to places in the Bible, and I'll just write a question mark, and I'll look at God, and I'll say, Lord, I don't understand it. I don't get it. But I realize that I don't have to know everything in order to follow Him. And so, there are some things that I have experienced, and I want them for you. Can I want some things for you this morning? I want you to come in contact with Jesus the way that this woman at the well came in contact with Him. That when He looked at her eyes. Now, here's the amazing thing. He summarizes her past in one sentence. Did you realize that? How long would it take you to summarize your past? Huh? How often do you rehearse your past? Lord, you could write a book, couldn't you? You're like, I could write novels, volumes. And she says, here's a man that told me everything about my past. So I went back and I said, how long did it take him to summarize her past? He does it in one sentence. What does he say? Jesus said to her, you have correctly said, comma, that's still the same sentence. I have no husband, semicolon, still same sentence. For you have had five husbands, and the one whom you have now is not your husband. You have said truly. Summed it up in one sentence. What do we gather from that? For anybody who comes to Jesus, He is less interested in summing up your past and more interested in transforming your future. Did you hear that? We're so worried about our past. Let me tell you this. God can sum it up in one sentence and it'll say everything He needs to say, and everything you need to know will be inside of it. Because I tell you this, Jesus is less interested in summarizing and bringing up your past, and He is more interested in covering it with His blood and transforming your future. And then this thing, there are some things that I hope you have encountered. If you have not encountered it, I want to give you the opportunity before the end of the service today. One is to encounter the love of God. It's not explicitly in the story, but somehow it's got to be there, doesn't it? That the one who looks with eyes of love looks at this woman and somehow loves her back to health. He doesn't condemn her. He doesn't judge her. He loves her somehow, and it draws her to Him. That is the reason that whenever there are doubts in my mind, I go back to this encounter with God, this love of God. That day, some of you heard my story. It was a night, actually, when I'm sitting in a lifeguard chair at the beach, and I encountered the love of God. That now I know I have touched something, and it is superhuman. Do you know what I'm talking about? Have you encountered the love of Christ? When you have encountered it, you realize, wait a minute, I touched something, and it is not like the love that I've seen from my other five husbands. It is not like the love that I have seen in this world. I've touched love, and somehow it is different than anything I've ever seen. I found joy. I found joy when one day at a camp that these two clowns over here invited me to, and I got so happy just in the midst of people talking about Jesus. And then my wife got so happy that literally we left that camp, and for a solid week we had a grin on our face. And we would look at each other and go, why are we so happy? And we're like, I don't know, but it sure feels good. In the presence of the Lord is fullness of joy. and we had tapped into something, and did we still have the same bank account that we had before we left for that conference? We sure did. Did we still have the same situations in life? We sure did. So we found a joy that wasn't tied to what was going on in the world. It was connected to something supernatural. And we would just look at each other and go, why are we laughing? And it was like, we just found joy. Peace. You find this peace that surpasses understanding. Some of you have walked through situations, and if people knew your story, they go, oh, bless your heart. Right? Serious stuff. And you would go, but I had such peace. And you go, where did you get that peace? It's not from everything going on good in your life. That's what the world wants. If I can just get everything in my life going good, then I'll have peace. You can't wait for that. You need a peace that is not tied to your circumstances and your situations. You need a peace so that when you are walking through the storm, you still got it. When you are walking through hell, at least the lobby of it, that there's still peace. And I'll have people tell me, Kevin, I don't understand why I have so much peace. I'm like, whatever you do. Y'all hear me? Listen, when you have that peace that passes all understanding, don't try to understand it. Amen. That's why they pay me the big bucks. Because of all the profound things I say on a Sunday morning. I'm going to say it over here. When you get in touch with this peace that passes all understanding, has nothing to do with your circumstances or your situation, and you have that moment in your head where you're like, I don't understand why I'm at such peace. And you don't try to figure it out. Because it's a peace that surpasses understanding. And the moment you try to understand it, you've ruined it. Just live in it. So there's love and there's joy and there's peace. And Lord knows there's a time at which there's power. Man, some of y'all haven't been here long enough to know, but there was a day that I never preached. I just laid in the floor in my office over there, and they brought people to me, and I don't prophesy. It's not my thing all that much. I leave that up to some of these others that are a lot better at it than me. But that day, the power of God flowed through me like electricity. I mean, I thought it was going to kill me. If you've ever heard those stories of people that say that they've had an encounter with God that was so powerful it felt like electricity, I'm here to tell you. In fact, the people that were around me, I'm like, do y'all think this is God? I'm like the woman. Do you think it's Jesus? You know, here's the pastor. I'm like, I don't know. Because this thing is so violent that I'm like, I'm not sure if it'll kill me or not. And they all looked around. They said, yeah, we think it's Jesus. I'm like, all right, let's go with it. And literally, as I would speak, I could feel the power run out of me. And I would ask them, I would say, y'all, you got to pray. Because I don't feel like it's there anymore. And they would pray and it would be like, whoom. And I've experienced it that once in my life like that. But I will tell you that you need those kind of encounters. You need that look into Jesus where you've been forgiven and it's settled. That it's settled. You need to look into His eyes and find a love that you realize you can't get anywhere on earth like that. You need a joy that when you've encountered it, you realize, wait a minute, there is something outside of my circumstances. A peace that is outside of my circumstances. And that becomes your stories. Do you hear me? Those are your stories. Those encounters that you've had with God, the things, how He's changed your life, that's your story. Tell it. Those encounters that you've had with God. That last story is just weird. It's just weird. And in fact, there are a lot of people who would tell me that what I had was not God, it was something else. And for the life of me, I can't explain it. So I'm a lot like that woman. I have found a man. You should come and see Him because He's touched me in a way that I've never been touched before. And if you say, well, I need to ask you a bunch of questions, I'm like, you can, but I don't have any answers. All I have is an encounter. We have turned the gospel into something that is purely theological and it's in our head. And we wonder why nobody wants it. They don't need your theology. So don't worry about getting that straight. They need your story. So you got to tell it. They don't need you to know all the arguments for salvation and losing salvation or can you or should you and blah, blah, blah. They don't need that. You can study that if you want to. They need an encounter. They need your story. You got to tell it. So I want to end with this. We have worked so hard of being out in the community. And we had this prophetic word. It came from, I think, Pat down here and Chris and maybe some others added to it. And the prophetic word was this, that out of the back door was going to come a wave and it was going to move into the community. Oddly enough, Chris, Pat's husband, looked it up on a map and East Chester is out our back door. And as you know, we have invested significantly in that community. In fact, I drove through that neighborhood Friday. I got so excited, I picked my son Caden up from the high school and I had to take him by as well. Because we set out to build houses and to minister to the people in East Chester. It's taken us a year. We're almost through building ours. And the Lord sent Harvest Call in and they done built three. And you think I would be upset about that? I'm not. I'm happy as can be. I said, Lord, I didn't fund those houses. I didn't drive a nail or screw a screw in. You did it all. He did it all. So I got a story about that if you want to hear it. And so it was this thing that this wave was going to go out. It was going to go into East Chester. And then it was going to come back. And it was going to take over Ember. Let me tell you where I think I am. I said, Lord, I believe that we're in a shift in a season where all the stuff we've done out in the community is going to turn into this individual call on your life. Do you hear me? That this thing is moving into an individual call, not this corporate thing that we've been doing out in the community, but it's coming down to you. It's coming down to you and your story. That there's a shift happening. And that what's going to happen now is that God's going to unleash you to go and tell your story. Because now you know your past doesn't hinder you. It's an asset to the kingdom. That you went through it so you can help somebody else move through it. That all your fears and all that stuff, it doesn't matter. That we just tell our story. And so I believe now that we're in this season of personal evangelism. And I can't wait to see what happens. I don't know when the wave's coming. I don't even know anything about surfing, but when I've watched them, they do this. When they expect a good wave, they will orient themselves in the direction of the wave. Did you hear that? If you think a wave's coming, you ought to turn yourself in that direction. And then they start paddling. Because apparently when you start moving in the same direction that the wave is going, it's easier to catch the wave. That's better than you might have realized. Some of you got it, though, because you went, oh, I know what I'm supposed to do. Yes. If you want to catch this wave, then turn yourself in the direction that you see it going and begin to move. And let's just see if the wave of God will catch us. One final thing. Your top 10 list. Do you have it? I've got mine. Brantley asked me this yesterday, actually, she said, who's on your list? I said, why you won't be worried about my list? Worry about your own list.
You asked me first. You were in the car.
I don't remember it that way. I don't remember it that way.
It was that way.
So we started talking, and she said, well, I don't have 10. And I said, well, okay, that's fine. You don't have to have 10. For some of you, you're looking a little confused. What we did about 2 weeks ago is I challenged all of you to pull out your phone. In fact, I ask you to do it now. Get your phone back out and look at your list. I challenge people to have 10 people on their list that they thought that they could lead to a relationship with Jesus Christ, that they could move them somehow into a relationship with Jesus Christ. And I asked you during the service, as we played at the end, to just begin to put people on that list. And so we began to review and say, well, I don't have 10. I want to tell you, you don't have to have 10, okay? 1, 2, 4. Brantley said, you know, if these folks all receive Christ, I'm going to be busy. I said, well, yeah. I said, but what happens generally is the call goes out and some follow and some don't. So I got about 15. Because I don't know what all of them's going to do. And so I just want to reach out to as many people as I possibly can. I want to throw the seed as broadly as I possibly can. To see, come and see a man. 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 Not necessarily come to Ember, but come and see a man. But don't withhold this thing of coming to Ember. Because I tell you what, if any of these people start moving in the direction of following Christ, I want them to meet y'all. I want them to meet y'all. Because I know you'll love them. I know you'll love on them. I know you won't worry about where they came from, what their past is like, how much stuff they got going on in their life. I know you'll just love them. When they run through difficult situations, I know you won't leave them, that you'll walk as best you can alongside of them as much as they'll let you. So I think this is a good place to bring people. If anybody wants to enter into a relationship with Jesus Christ, you better believe I'm going to try to get them somehow connected to you guys. So I want you to pull out your list, praise team. I want you to come. Like I said, we cannot preach messages and then not give people an opportunity to respond. So let me give you this as they're coming. If you have never seen Jesus as Lord and Savior, if you've never put your trust in Him, I want to invite you to come and see a man, to come and start a relationship. Just like that woman, I'll get your hand and we'll walk to Jesus.